Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Katie Kiefer from What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to
The Man About It
on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and heritageradionetwork.org.
Awesome. So we're at the Blind Tiger in Manhattan for a very special evening. We're here with Sam Collegione and Brian Grossman of Dogfish Head and Sierra Nevada, respectively. So, hi, guys.
Hello.
What's up, you two?
We're super excited to be here. So we just tasted through the Beer Cramp Across America,
Beer Camp Across America,
2016 collaboration. So you guys are coming out with a 12-pack as well as a series of beer festivals.
2 years ago, I was managing 508 Gastrobrewery, or I was the brewer there, and I got this bottle in the mail that had this invite to festivals. It was just an incredible invite. And you sent, Brian, you sent invites to all the brewers in America for a beer camp.
Every brewer in America, yeah.
That was awesome. That was an awesome receipt.
How much did that mailing cost when you sent something to every brewery?
Yep.
That yep put a number of zeros behind it.
Yippo.
So this is an amazing collaborative series. So let's talk about, so you have six beers in this 12-pack, and it was 31 breweries.
Yeah, so basically the idea behind Beer Camp is it's a larger than Sierra Nevada type thing. This is a celebration of craft beer as an industry, and the idea behind Beer Camp, let's just say one, was a celebration of us opening up our East Coast brewery. We just tasted through all six beers.
Yeah.
Us opening up our East Coast brewery, and we said, how are we going to really celebrate this? You know, having a party for us doesn't feel right. Let's invite everybody. So our new brewery facility can't fit every craft brewer in the nation 2 years ago. So we said, let's just break it up into small parties. And we did this traveling tour, basically from California over to North Carolina. And you know, we went down to San Diego and up to Portland, Maine, and everywhere in between. So we invited 12 different brewers to participate in a 12-pack, and we brewed 12 unique beers, and you know, it was a hell of a lot of fun. People loved it, and come around 2 years later, because we needed to take off a year in between to sort of recover ourselves, we said, how are we going to go bigger? Because we're all about, you know, pushing it out a little bit, pushing the bounds. And can you do a 24-pack? I don't know if we're ready to do a 24-pack yet, so we said, you know what, let's do a 12-pack again. But let's do six beers, and you get two of each. We got a lot of feedback saying, hey, I wish I had another bottle of whatever it was to share with a buddy, share drinking partner. So,
Which is what beer's all about, sharing.
So how do you make it bigger? We said we're going to take a page from the music industry, and we made our own super groups where you know, you'd pick a singer from band one and a drummer from band two and so on and so forth. So we picked these captains, these super group captains, one of which is my good friend Sam Calgioni. And we said, hey, Sam, you want to be part of this thing? And, you know, got the call back saying yes, and we told him how this is going to work. So Sam got to pick four brewers that he respected, and he picked them for, you know, his reasons, which I'm sure he'll talk about, but we did this with all these beers. So we have 30-plus brewers, us being the 30 brewers in it with us. Just bigger variety pack. You know, it's a fun beer pack.
Where are the proceeds from this going?
Yeah, so this is not a dollar-driven cause, so... we're going to donate $100,000, which is the proceeds from the 12-pack to a variety of charities, and the charities were actually picked by the super groups themselves. So we've got some money going to cancer research, we've got some money going to hop research, we've got some money going to barley research, and then there's a separate component, which are the festivals. So we're doing 6 festivals. The first one starts in Tampa June 4th, and then there's a festival happening every weekend after that in the whole month of June, both East Coast and West Coast. And the proceeds from that go to the Brewers Guilds of the states that they're in that are putting the festivals on. So, you know, once again, this isn't necessarily a Sierra Nevada project. This is a craft brewing project. Right. And you know,
it's helping things on a local level as well. Like going to the Brewers Guild and able to strengthen their own communities and creating more craft brewing
Each guild has their own battle. So I'm part of the North Carolina State Brewers Guild. I sit on the board of the State Guild there. And, you know, we've got our own unique challenges to fight, things like self-distribution caps, some excise tax laws, some alcohol reform in general. And those types of things take energy, effort, and they do take dollars. I mean, you need a lobbyist sometimes going in there every day and talking to our state, you know, representatives. So go out and vote. Make sure you pick the right people.
People who love beer.
People that represent your views. But, I mean, the guilds are highly important for us brewers to help us maintain and to keep doing what we love to do.
So a huge amount of time and effort went into this project. So when did you get the call to be team captain?
So the brewers, the 30 brewers, all end up meeting at the Asheville Sierra around the middle of August. But Ken and Brian Grossman reached out to me, I think, around June. And then we were charged with the 6 captains were contacted in late June. And those were brewers that had already done projects with Sierra or just had a great relationship with Sierra. And we were asked, you know, it's cool that Sierra left it to our discretion to say, you represent this region, you know your region, choose a complementary team from your region for the project. And that was a wonderful process of getting to acknowledge brewers from the Northeast for me, both those that inspired me when I was starting that came before us and those that inspire me that came after us and I think are doing unique creative things in our industry. So putting the team together was a big part of the fun, and then the creative process and learning from each other and how iterative it was wonderful and intense. And again, none of the brewers that are involved, there's no revenue stream. And you think of these people working at 30 breweries, giving up, you know, dozens of, not hundreds of hours, definitely hundreds of hours when you're thinking about the test batches and stuff.
Sure.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours for a passion project. It's not a profit project, it's a passion project, and it's been a wonderful journey, and you can taste the passion in every ounce of those 12 bottles.
So talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts behind the process. So after you guys had your big meeting in August and talked about, you know, what style you want to do, what ingredients, that's an interesting thing about this is that you guys, a lot of the teams are using local ingredients to their region. So what happened after that?
So speaking from the Northeast team, I know from talking to some of my friends on other teams, the process was very similar, which was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails, literally, and dozens of conference calls. Many of those conference calls were done while we had the test batches. So very iterative process. The teams would brew R&D batches in their facilities. They'd meet in one of the team members' facilities, do an R&D batch, and then Sierra would open their doors, and R&D batches were brewed there. Sierra's brewers would send out the samples to every team, and then a Sierra representative would be on the conference call as the team said, okay, here's what I'm getting off of this test batch. Let's tweak it in this direction or that direction. So an iterative half-year process of tweaking every one of these recipes.
So today...
Like today. Till today.
Till today. Today is a pre-launch.
How about you guys? I'm going to interview you guys. You guys are among the first people in the world to try Beer Camp. What were your impressions of the process and the results of our labors of love?
I'm going to say that, first of all, the order which we were served Beer Camp, the six-pack, was awesome today. It wasn't just by ABV, but it was just flavor profile and accentuation, and they were in the perfect, right, they were awesome order. Starting from the first one, the 4.7%, 4.5%, summer.
The tea infused.
4.9.
Southern Table Beer.
And also the time at which we came to this event was kind of a late afternoon kind of thing, so that was like the perfect happy hour kind of starter and intro. I came off of a 8.5 hour brewery shift, right? So
nice.
That was righteous for me. Like that was just like the perfect thing that I wanted at the end of this brewery shift.
Happy hour.
Yeah. But then the next rye beer that we had also was really lovely. They were all awesome in their own rights, and also the fact that each one of those is paying attention to their own terroir and kind of the ingredients and to their region, whether it's historically for the Northeast region that you guys chose to do, that the route you guys chose to take, and just accepting for the Southwest region that they should be making an IPA or West Coast IPA.
The Northwest.
Northwest.
And they hopped the shit out
of it. Yeah. But from Bale Breaker, those, yeah.
So I think I was most impressed by each and every one of these six beers is that they were all complex yet very drinkable, which is a difficult thing to do. I mean, we see now in the craft beer, we see a lot of very drinkable beers. We see a lot of very complex beers, but they're not always one and the same. Yeah, and I love the use of local ingredients. I'm a huge fan of using what's around you. And I think that your team's made the most of this. So I was very impressed.
We're very proud of you.
Yeah, we are proud of the results. And we're just here representing 30 breweries to say we are proud of what we've done.
Awesome. So I want to ask you, you guys each got to choose what the other brewery had
on tap here. Yeah, let's talk about
here.
This, Sam.
I fucked that up. Yeah.
Right. So we're here. Each of you.
That's
got to
a real. This is a real situation. So
yeah,
what did you choose?
So, we said, okay, we'll each bring three beers because we didn't want to have, one have four and one have three. But so I picked one of my favorite beers that Sam has done forever or a very long time, 10 years, is a beer when I always go visit him and I always go to the brewery. They know Brian loves the Festina. I mean, the Peach Berliner Weisses are just such a great style I love to death. And I think Sam does a very good job with it. So I pick, no questions asked. Beer I'm picking from Dogfish, Festina.
And I'm like a guy who brought a knife to a gunfight. So, I tried so hard, but Festina's not actually coming out of our bright tanks until, I think, 10 days from now. So I couldn't get it here. The beer I chose from, so I brought Namaste and 90 Minute and Beer to Drink Music too. But one of my absolute favorite, the first Sierra Nevada beer I ever had was in this city and was the day I fell in love with good beer, and it was Celebration. And that's always going to be one of my favorites. But one of my newer favorites is Keller Weiss, which when the warm weather comes, my wife Mariah and I crave Keller Weiss and seek it out. And so, yes, he got the goods to the party, and I did not.
We're making beer.
Namaste.
But you guys are not industrial brewers. You are making beer. It takes time.
We were not going to rush that,
exactly.
Even for our great friends.
I would have figured out a way.
Oh, no.
For a final note, really quick, I just want to say thank you on behalf of all the people who don't get the beer that of those collaborators in their states. The distribution model, or the fact that you get to taste I think something from that's been collaborated by people that are not distributed in your area. Is really cool and gives them a nice introduction to these newer markets, and it's just an awesome thing that you guys are doing on this project.
For sure.
It's been amazing, and it's awesome to have you here, and I can't thank you enough for the inspiration that you both have given me in the glass and in person over the years.
Nice. It's we're glad to be here, so high fives.
Cheers. For Man
About
It.
For Man About
It. Just a guy made me drink 120.
That's my fault! Thank you. That's nice in the streets of New York.
Yeah, of course. Wait, I have a last question too. Right. Last question. So I want to ask about something that's coming out that's particularly one of your favorite that you have coming out.
So we've done session sours and actually lambics with Festina Pesce and Festina Lente for over a decade, and now we've been working on a hybrid sour where we brew a Kolsch to grow yeast. let that ferment for one day, grow the yeast, and then dose into that same fermenter a batch of goes that has salt that we boil down from the mouth of the Chesapeake. And then the third thread of that beer is a Berliner Weiss with about 25% of the fermentables coming from lime juice. All three of those brewed in Sea Quench using sea salt. The beer is called Sea Quench Ale, a very thirst-quenching 4.9 Berliner Weiss Goes Kolsch thingy.
And when comes can
out,
we see this?
Comes out, it'll be in New York at the end of July. Cool. How about How you? About something you? Fun.
So, I mean, I've been doing a lot of time, energy, effort on a Trevase, but that one is already out, so I don't know if I can use that
no,
or not.
No, yes, I love it.
Okay, so I'm
also,
really...
Also, you guys have a unique process.
Yeah, so Otrevase is our new, basically German-inspired...
Germanish.
I'll say inspired.
It's
Goza beer.
Like well, there's a new BA category, right? American Gozas or American...
Nice. Yeah, I mean, so we took a traditionally German-style beer and added prickly pear cactus and grapefruit and put a Spanish name on it and called it Otrevase because it's, you know, really... The whole idea was behind a California throwback style, so the ingredients are California-centric ingredients to them, and we're looking for a hugely refreshing delivery on this thing. So Otrevase, I think, is I'm going refreshing. You're going thirst-quenching, but you know, inspirationally speaking, I think you're seeing brewers move to these wider styles of beer that are not just, you know, nothing wrong with IPAs. We love them to death. We're both really well-known for IPAs. Not taking anything away from IPAs, but the world of beer is much larger than just IPAs. So I'm really happy about Otrevase that's coming out.
It's out now.
It's out now.
Yes. It's out now.
Let's go have some.
Cheers. Thank you, guys.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
On Tuesday, May 17th, please join Snacky Tunes for the 9th Annual Barbecue Blowout. Our inaugural chefs are Kings County Imperial with Beats and Rhythms by Domino Records. Tickets are $10 in advance at BBQ Blowout, May2016.eventbrite.com. Tickets include a plate of food and a complimentary Brooklyn Brewery. We're happy to announce returning partners of Nikki Digital and Heritage Radio Network. We hope to see you there.
Okay, I'm here at the Brewers Association booth at Craft Brewers Conference 2016 with Julia Hertz.
Hello, and thank you.
Hi
for
there.
All that you do.
Thank you,
you
back,
are
Chris.
Craft Beer Program Director.
Correct.
Of the Brewers Association. Your spirit, your enthusiasm, and your devout dedication to
I believe
increasing the conversation of craft beer all across all platforms has been awesome, including
great.
The book you just did with Gwen Conley.
Yeah, beer pairing.
I love that book, and Gwen's a former teacher of mine at the American Brewers Guild. She's
awesome.
Fantastic and also a quite inspirational person.
Great.
Today you announced some really amazing news with regard to what the Smithsonian is doing. I'd love for you to touch upon that.
Yes. So we're very pleased to announce that the Brewers Association has just stepped up to be a three-year lead sponsor for a new initiative by the Smithsonian's American History Museum. That's a huge,
That's
big deal.
Awesome.
And
yeah.
It's tied to brewing. So what they want to do is further their documentation and preservation of the brewing history from 1960 to today. They currently do have and have paid homage to what's gone on in brewing and have a presence for 1870s to 1960, but there's really nothing from that era of 60 to today, so who better than to get the craft brewers of the U.S. to share their stories, artifacts, and oral histories, and they will compile that. They're hiring a new museum scholar to get this done. And we are excited to see this project get launched.
And that is a lot of information since 1960.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, once they dive in, how they decide what to document and what the craft brewing community can produce to give them. And then from there, they'll decide if they're doing exhibits, how, you know, they will have documentation in their archives for researchers. So this is relevant not just to the public, but relevant to researchers and scholars as well.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Well, so they haven't decided what perspectives they'll be taking on. They'll take it all on. It reflects our culture. It's a big part of what today is.
Yes. I mean, and they were talking about ties to community, ties to advertising, ties to agriculture. It really does. When you look at brewing, and I mean, today, if you were to talk about 2016, 1.6% of our gross domestic product comes from the business of beer.
Wow.
And that is not just business. We also contribute from just the small and independent craft brewers, 122,000 jobs. Exponential in billions in wages and benefits. So we're a business story. We're tied to agriculture. We're not making commodities, and we're working with something such as malted barley, which is a handcrafted ingredient. It's very important. You know, hops have terroir. So the agriculture piece is really, I think, key, and it ties to so many growers and farmers. And then the advertising history and the marketing. I mean, these small brewers, 4,300 of them, they need top-of-mind awareness. How are they marketing in 1960 and advertising then compared to today?
Yeah.
So there's a lot.
And even the growth. I mean, just standing here on this floor, this is twice as big as it was just last year as far as for this expo.
Yeah,
this
not quite twice. We have 835 exhibitors, and last year we had 600 some odd.
Okay.
But so this is some of it's the best time to be a beer lover, and it just keeps getting better, right? You know, so there's going to be ever always questions. Is the market saturated? Are there too many beers, too many breweries? And we're going to let the marketplace decide. And my answer right now today in 2016 is heck no. You know, there's 8,000 wineries in existence. Their sales for wineries is $40 billion. Estimated, maybe,
yeah.
And craft beer is $22 billion.
Oh, okay.
So we're getting even on the heels of wine. But then overall beer is $105 billion in sales. So you really do have room for growth. We also have, you know, 1,000 cities that have populations of 10,000 or more that do not have breweries yet. So there's exponential. And in those areas like hotbeds, Portland, you know, Chicago, Denver, San Diego, the list goes on and on. No question if there's ever, are there too many breweries? Well, the marketplace will speak up when there are.
That's right.
And right now, we're still seeing excellent opening rates compared to closing rates. More than 600 breweries opened in 2015 with only 60 some odd closing. So we're very pleased still today with the numbers we're seeing and the success and the growth.
I'm incredibly excited with all of this, especially because literally no less than 3 hours ago, my partner signed the lease on our 5,000 square foot spot. So we will be we are among the new people.
So congratulations!
Next up, but now that we have a location, now the TTB license, and then here we go.
Wow!
So chapter two, Julia.
Wow.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you, Chris.
You are awesome and inspiration. And if there's anything we can do for you ever, please, please, please.
And right back on Open to Your Brewery. You're in good company of 2,000, and you all need to make quality beer, differentiate. You got to know how to run a business, deal with compliance. You got to believe in the American dream if you want to be a brewer. And so I'm excited for you.
Cheers to that. Thank you. Ferment about it.
Right on.
How you doing? This is Chris Cousby. We are outside of Pennsylvania 6 at the Craft Brewers Conference, enjoying a New York State Brewers Association night of New York State beer here in Philadelphia. We're going to get off beer for the moment because I'm reconnecting with a long-lost friend. Actually, one of my first experiences with mead was with this gentleman at the New York City Home Brewers Guild. Taught me a lot, spoke a lot. I've been very impressed with stuff and his recovery from the fire at the meadery, as well as my first meadery. Tour was when my parents moved to Boulder, Colorado, and I got to visit the brewery. I'm extremely ecstatic to be here with David Myers. David Myers of Redstone Meadery.
Hey, you know, now, real quick, we didn't have a fire. We didn't have a fire at the meadery. It's just my house burning.
Oh, it's just your house.
To be clear, the meadery is fine.
The meadery is fine.
Yeah.
Well, that was a rough time. I didn't mean to bring that up.
Hey, you know, I'm a very big proponent of. I look at it this way: if the worst thing that ever happens to me in my life that my house burned down, I had a pretty damn good life.
Yep. Well, you and what I learned through the New York City Homebrewers Guild kind of made me a passionate mead lover, and I've been promoting mead across New York City and started New York City Mead Week only by planting a flag, whatever. But you are one of the only meaderies currently that are even distributed in New York City, and you have been for a very long time. What do you think the state of mead is in the country? How has your company seen growth, and what is it that Redstone Meadery does?
Well, you know, biggest thing I like to say about what's going on in the mead industry, I mean, the mead industry by percentage is in fact the fastest growing category in the alcohol industry. Now, it's a little bit of a misnomer because, of course, we're so damn tiny to begin with,
right,
that, of course, we get high percentages when we get growth. But the mead industry is growing about 150% a year for the last, like, 3 years. And the biggest indicator I give that the category is truly exploding is, you know, 15 years ago when we started, there were 35, maybe 40 meaderies in the United States whose primary beverage of production was mead. Today, that number is closer to 250. And 100 of those have probably popped up in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the canary in the coal mine, where you're basically saying, here's what's going on in the category where people are rushing in. And I think lots of these people are making great mead, so I'm not knocking that they're rushing in. But
right,
it does show that there's a mentality of thinking that the mead industry is really exploding and growing exponentially.
Right. And you're here during a craft Brewers Conference. Is that a coincidence? Is that just a
I was just looking for free beer.
Yeah.
So, a couple of these places, they'll let anybody in these places. You can drink as much as you damn want, and it's great. No, it's not a coincidence. We've been in business 15 years. This is probably my 13th Craft Brewers Conference. I missed last year, but that's just because it's my wife's birthday that week, so I took the year off to go celebrate with her. But, you know, we really think that mead has far more in common. You know, we're technically wine. It's honey wine.
Right.
Federal government recognizes it as a winery. But we really believe that mead has far more in common with the craft beer, the craft cider industry, than the grape wine industry. So I've always been a very big proponent, really from the get-go, of we've always marketed towards craft beer. And, I have a lot of background with craft beer. I was an assistant manager at the Great American Beer Festival and the World Beer Cup for many years on the competition side. And I've always just been a fan. I mean, you know, from I started homebrewing in the late 80s, making beer. I got turned on to mead in the early 90s through Charlie Papazian.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were, you know, just being part of it. But, you know, I used to go into towns, and when I showed up someplace locally in the 90s, I was like, hey, what kind of beer you got around here? So I've always been a fan, but I really do think that the industry has, you know, we're more in line. I kind of always say we're an independent, but we caucus with the craft beer people.
Yeah, and I think this is spoken to in New York City. We have you can get a beer and wine license, or you get a full liquor license. And
right,
the beer and wine license, you know, mead and Calvados cider.
I don't pay attention to the walls.
Whatever that apple thing is going on. But actually,
is.
a couple bars like Barcade, they boast.
Actually, Barcade's a great great example of a wonderful supporter of Redstone.
Absolutely.
Blind Tiger has always had us around on the product. And again, we can get great wine drinkers to drink our product, but they need to be introduced to it. They need to be solicited. They need to be talked to. They need to be tasted. Where the craft beer industry, because it's so connected ultimately to the home brewing industry, they get what we're doing. And, we talk a lot about our products. I mean, I love my products. I think my products are absolutely great.
Of course I do.
But we also talk about mead beer blending.
Yeah.
You mix it with stouts and wheat beers and sours. We do cocktails with them. Hell, you can do you can do some orange juice. Makes for a great Sunday morning mead mosa.
Absolutely.
Or Tuesday morning mead mosa. Depends on on your personal habits. But, you know, we always say, look, we love our products. They're great by themselves, but they do play well with others.
Absolutely. They absolutely do. What can we do as consumers to... last question. What can we do as consumers to help increase the mead market
How can we help you?
Buy some more freaking mead. I mean, yeah, no, but now, and I say it, I mean, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but the best thing we can ever ask for consumers to do is ask for mead. And that's always been actually an early premise of ours since the day we got started, including, you know, one of our generic business cards says ask for mead. My mead, her mead, his mead, their mead, I don't care. What really helps us out more than anything is if you're in the marketplace and you ask for mead.
Yep.
Because obviously consumers are going to drive trends. It's not bars. It's not bartenders. Right. I know there's this, that, and the other, the hips of this. No. It's you, the consumer, is the most powerful person in the alcohol drinking world. And if you go into a bar and be like, hey, you got any mead, that helps me. It helps the other meaderies. It helps everybody else. We're a big believer. Rising tide floats all boats. So we've always been a campaigner for the category and saying, hey, ask for mead.
Hear you, hear you. And not all mead is alike. Ask for it. Try it. Don't give up. And mead is fucking awesome.
Yeah, and that's our whole big thing. It's like, a lot of times people will say to us, hey, I tried a mead once. I don't like mead. I'm like, maybe you haven't had a mead you like.
Exactly.
You didn't drink a beer that you didn't like and suddenly go, I don't like beer no more. Right. Or you had a wine you like and you didn't like and you went, I don't like wine. And mead's the same way. It's a very wide category. Lots of great producers out there in the U.S. as well as the world. And they're wonderful things. So, there's a mead for everybody. They just got to find what they like.
Damn straight. It's a man about it. Thank you very much, David Myers. How can we find out more about Redstone Meadery?
You can check us out, redstonemeadery.com. We have product available throughout the country, certainly in New York City. You go into your local local liquor store or bar, tell them SKI's got it, and you want it, and you can get it on in.
You want it, you get it. It's a man about it.
Excellent.
All right, I'm here on the floor in the Brewers Association tent booth at the Craft Brewers Conference 2016, and I'm hanging out with Jimmy Stockwell and our old friend Sean White of Little Fish Brewing Company in Athens, Ohio. First of all, Sean, this needs to be said. Thank you for making Ferment About It exist. Sean, you brewed. You were Mary's first experience in all grain brewing, brewing together with you. So that has ultimately led to this show, which is awesome, and actually ultimately led to my marriage. So thank you for that.
You are welcome for. I think I'm being falsely credited here for the matchmaking, at least. But I think I do remember Mary and I brewed like an Orval clone, and it was pretty nice. We were pretty happy with it. So.
And that was when you were part of the New York City Home Brewers Guild, and you also served as president, and you are a neighbor in New York. Why Athens? What? Tell us about your journey. Who are you? What the hell is going on here?
Well, I was in New York at the time pursuing a culinary career, which I got really burnt out on, and at the same time was just getting super stoked on brewing. I remember living less than a mile away from Six Point Brewery, and those guys were just super friendly to me as a home brewer, hooking us up with ingredients and yeast and just being inspirations. Amen. And I guess I started going to those New York City homebrewers meetings, and that was a big thing for me. And eventually at some point said, I really need to commit to this as a job. And the path that I personally chose was to work for some breweries and work my way up from the bottom up, as opposed to, go to school or start a nano brewery, which are also very viable options. But the path I chose was to work for some people, gather some wisdom, get a business plan together. And I think one of the areas that I always wanted to go back to is Athens, Ohio, because it's just such an amazing community. It's a small town, but we have a college. We're pretty liberal. I love Athens. It's just an amazing place. Jimmy and I both grew up there. We had exposure to a lot of different ideas through the fact that there's a college there. There's a big, sort of hippie back to the earth movement. People really support local and sustainable foods. And it's just an area that's ripe for craft beer. When we started, there was only one brewery, Jackie O's Brew Pub, and I was working for them. And we started our business plan, and another brewery, another friend of ours, Cameron, started a brewery, Devil's Kettle. And so now we're now three breweries in Athens, and I think it's sort of the seed of a real craft brewing and craft fermentation scene really popping up and being nurtured in Athens.
The growth in the everywhere is pretty amazing.
And we were able to do something that, you know, I don't think we could have done even in like a moderately large city. We purchased a very modest building and then like 2 acres of green space. So we've just installed like a hop yard, and we have fruit trees that, you know, we will incorporate into sort of like the terroir of our own beers. And then just going back to one of the ideas when we started was, while Athens itself is this great place to live, with the college, most of the bars are college oriented, and there really wasn't like quite the space to go and relax that wasn't in that like college centric, at least area, if not actually like a college centric bar. And so we are outside of town just like a little bit, and you know, we've got a big outdoor space, and we really like wanted to bring like the inside, like, you know, like farm culture experience, sure, like, and integrate it into that tap room experience that we have on site.
What kind of beers are you making?
Our passion is really saisons and funky farmhouse ales and sour beers, but obviously you can't start out with a large stock of pre-made sour beer. Right. That takes time. But
how much time have you been open?
We have been open for less than a year. We opened in July last of 2015. And so, you know, we love brewing saison. We brew a lot of our flagship saison. It's brewed with 1/3 raw Ohio spelt. And that's all organic malt and all organic spelt. So we like to put that local focus on a lot of the beers we do. We don't just brew Belgian-style beers. We have an IPA. We basically wanted to not put any boundaries on what we wanted to brew. But when we brew an IPA or a Pilsner or our milk stout, those stay in kegs. They don't. They're not bottled. And then everything we bottle is barrel aged with some level of funk. So we've got our saisons are coming out, and those all have Brettanomyces in them, and they're bottle conditioned. And you know, we're just really working on trying to craft beautiful farmhouse style beers. And then we bought a fooder, a 30 barrel oak fooder, and so we had our first fooder beer released. That was an old ale that was conditioned with Brettanomyces also. And now we're transitioning the fooder into being a large souring vessel for a Flanders Red style beer. And we are hoping to keep that fooder full all of the time and only draw off portions of it and when it's ready, and package that as a finished beer.
Kind of a Solera-ish.
Yeah, Solera-ish. And we'll just have to check the evolution of that project. I mean, if the beer tells us to do something different, we'll do something different. But that's the plan.
Sure. You said it's a 30-barrel fooder, but you have a 10-barrel system?
Yes. So that's, yeah, 3 brews. That's a, it's a big guy, but if you're going to invest the money in a giant oak tank, you might as well go big. You
totally
know?
Worth it. So. Go big or go little fish, I say.
Yeah.
Go big and go little fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can we find out more information about Little Fish, and how do we visit you?
We certainly have a website, littlefishbrewing.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
You can come to Athens, Ohio, visit all 3 of the wonderful breweries there, and just have an amazing experience. That's the best way to check out Little Fish, because you just get that experience. You know, when you come into the building, it's an open floor plan. The tap room is not separated from the brewery. The outside is right there. Bring your kids. People bring their kids all the time. We've got food every day, and we're open Tuesday through Saturday.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much.
Hey, oh, I messed so up, actually. Season. We're open Tuesday through Sunday.
Fantastic.
Okay. It's great to see you, Kuzme. It's been a long time, and I love you, man. It's good to catch up.
Seriously.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.